Hey everyone, hope this message finds you doing fantastic. I had a lot of joy sitting down and visiting with one of my friends, Chelsea Cunningham. She's a founder and CEO of The Title Girl. The business is focused on servicing old dealerships in the major cities of Texas with a wide range of concierge title services, which is very, very interesting. And we'll dive in deep here to really some early humble beginnings, how she built this business from scratch, her early on failures, and what she was able to do to learn from her own mistakes to then scale the business to the position where it is today. I'm super pumped. Enjoy.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Welcome to another episode of the Tomas Show. Today, my guest is a dear friend, somebody that I really admire for what she's accomplished, not only in her career, but most importantly, who she is as a person. And I'm very grateful that she's today. She's a busy, busy bee. She is driving around, running a business, managing employees, but yet she managed to come here and be a guest on the show. Welcome, Chelsea Cunningham.
Thank you very much, Tomas. I'm super happy to be here.
Chelsea Cunningham is a CEO and founder at The Title Girl, which is a very, you know, when I met you at the beginning, I'm like, that's a clever name. Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of brand, you know, me as a marketing guy, I was like, this is really something that is that has its purpose probably behind it. I just don't know what it is. So I would love to dive into this, you know, kind of your passion for community. You're working with a lot of, you know, business owners, business leaders. You're very passionate about what you do. You love to travel. So there's so many things to dive into. But to begin with, I would love to highlight, you know, kind of where you're from, where you went to school, and how you got to Texas, because I think that's how we all somehow got here, whether we're raised here or not. But I would love to hear that first, you know, for the benefit of our audience.
Absolutely. Well, I was born in Illinois and raised more so in Florida. I went to high school out there and had taken off after 18 and lived in California, Houston, the Carolinas. I basically knew since I was a teenager that I was going to be established in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to travel and experience other things that challenged me before I got to the place that I knew was going to be called my home. And so I got here 4.5 years ago and started my company about 4 months after I got to Dallas.
Wow. Okay. So talk about the you know, your beginnings when you got to Dallas, you know, because I want to touch on that in depth, you know, how. Because you graduated, where did you go to school, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I kind of did the school of hard knocks. I did some formal education in L.A.
Okay.
Had a private school out there and did some community college over in Orlando. But school and college wasn't ever a big route for me.
Yes.
I can respect education, but it just wasn't a normal route.
Just entrepreneurial heart.
Yes.
Always. Yes. You know, I talk to so many people and I admire that because I feel like, as a matter of fact, you don't have to go to school. If you feel like, you know, there's everything out there, all the tools and resources for you to learn what you want to do and accomplish. So I think that's, you know, that's something that I respect and you've done that. So, and you're a successful business owner running a great company today. So another proof that it can be done. I love, don't get me wrong, I'm an educated person, largely because of athletic scholarships. So I was very fortunate. I would never be able to be in America otherwise, probably. So I'm a big supporter of those that have ideas, and perhaps college is not for them because they think they can scale something and make something grow. So I admire you for that. So how did you, you know, you sounds like you worked, you know, from LA, I think you've had a couple of jobs before you launched your business. How did that idea come about? What made you think, like, you know what, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first graduated high school, I actually studied foreign exchange day trading for a while and did that. And then I also had ended up working for like staffing companies. And so I had to go, you know, do sales. That really carved me into the ability to just cold call on construction sites. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a very male dominated business, which is what I'm in today, the car business. But how it, you know, essentially turned about is I got in a car wreck when I was in that community college in Orlando, and I had no car, no money. So, I basically told, I basically used, a loan on a car, from my parents. I said, hey, I'm going to buy this car from you. Took that money and actually, just took the equity out on it.
Yes.
Used that as my floor plan in the car business. That's how you use a loan. And basically, started buying cars at the auction when I was 21. So I started flipping cars at the auctions when I was 21. And that's how, I got my start in the business. Had no idea what I was doing or even what to buy, but I had $7,000 in my pocket. Bought cars for $1,500 and sold them for three about every 2 weeks. And that's kind of how I made it through college.
That is insane. Hold on. Time out. I don't even know what to say. I mean, I didn't even know that you, this was your, you know, really, I mean, humble beginnings. Talking about humble beginnings, taking some money from your parents, or well, it's you earned that money, obviously took some equity out, and then you were just flipping cars. But what person, like how, like this is a specific, like, okay, hey, I want to flip homes. I want to flip cars. Some people flip, I don't know, game cards or whatever people collect these days. What was it? Were you always passionate about cars or the automotive space? Or
no, not at all, actually. Now I am. I can say that for sure. Yeah. But it was something I was unaware of. And basically, because I had no car, I'm a very creative thinker, problem solver. That's literally all I do all day long. And so in that situation, I just said, okay, I have no money and no car. So how do I fix this? And so I just basically, you know,
told how many cars do you think you flipped or so? Do you have any idea?
Probably, you know, for about a year I did it. So I probably did 24 cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. And so it was that was the track record to get every 2 weeks flip them.
For sure.
It was crazy because I had no idea what I was doing. I was on the auction block. If you've ever been on an auction block at a auction house, there's 25 lanes. 25 people yelling numbers. You have no idea what you're doing. And one time I actually bought a stick shift on accident and had to learn how to drive at home that day because and it was 45 minutes away. So there was a lot of bumps and hurdles in there, but it was fun. So I just knew I had a problem. I had no car and no money and I had to solve it. Mm-hmm. So I did.
Wow. And then what happened next? What happened after, you know, your flipping journey?
So I went from the flipping journey in Orlando, Florida, and then I went and worked for the Hendrix Group in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I worked for BMW and did sales over there for them for about a year. And so I got wholesale experience, franchise experience, and then I basically flew to Dallas for a day because I knew it's where I was supposed to be. I actually met a guy when I was out and told him I was in the business, and I literally went there to find a job, and I had 2 days because you get no days off in the car business.
Of course.
So I meet him. He tells me where to go. Just happenstance, right? And so I go there, and I tell them, hey, listen, it was a high-end independent in Dallas, and I said, I'm going to come work for you, and I'll be here in 2 months. And they were kind of flabbergasted and had no idea what I was talking about or who I was. They had never hired a female before. But I went in there and that was the dealership, the independent dealership that I worked for in Dallas when I first moved here. So
cars again, flipping, then working at a dealership. So when I'm curious, when did you find this internal or maybe subconscious piece of information inside of you? Like, damn, I love cars. I'm very passionate about them. I think it's probably something that I'm supposed to be doing and make a good buck out of it. So how did you know, because there's so many people like that are looking for their own niche, the journey to self-awareness. There's so many conversations and debates about this, you know, how do you get there? How did you think you got there yourself?
Yeah. So here I think is a big misconception that people who are trying to start businesses have is that you have to be completely passionate about whatever you're doing. I'm passionate about solving problems. And that's just where the metal meets the road, you know, because I'm passionate about solving problems and being my own boss. When I was 17, I said, I will never work for anybody again after I'm 24. When I was 24 was the year that I started the company. And so, but to tie back into that, I had a gentleman when I lived in Houston tell me, Chelsea, you should do some title running on the side. had no idea what it was, no concept of it. There's nothing on the internet. You can't research it. Thank God, because I'm not a researcher, really. And so basically that burned in the back of my mind since I was 20 years old until when I came to Dallas and I felt that just stirring in my heart so heavy. And you know, I'm a spiritual person and, you know, believe in God. And I was like, God, you didn't bring me to Dallas, Texas just to sell cars. I meant for something greater and let's go. And that's when this thing started coming on me. So I just want to bring, you know, that to the forefront. When you have something that's on you, even if you have no idea how to do it, just go forward. The steps of action will get you so much further than research ever will. And so I had no idea any of this, but I literally, there's nothing you can find online, mm-hmm. worked 6 days a week at a car lot, had no financial backing, and had just moved to a city that I didn't know a soul in 4 months, you know? And so I cold turkey, quit my job, had enough to survive for 2 months living on my own for the first time, and was like, either this is going to work or it's not. I bought a box of donuts and started cold calling on dealerships the next day with zero clue of what I was doing, what I was going to charge, how to fill out the paperwork, nothing. But I knew that I knew car guys and I knew how to sell to them. And so I knew that if I had that talent, I could navigate conversations enough to get the job done and problem solve my way through it.
Wow. So hold on. I mean, I'm trying to grasp what you just said. 2 months worth of support for yourself. You bought a box of donuts and you were like, sure, let's just do it. I mean, I'll figure it out. That takes guts. Like, you really have to be, you know, a certain way to look yourself in the mirror and be like, you know what? Like, I'm going to do this. You have no other way. You have to pay for yourself, obviously. You have to, and you have to live and pay bills, right? But yep. So how did you said you didn't research anything, which, you know, I usually try to research things, but to your point, the best type of experience is practical when you do it and you fail, trial and error basis. So how were you able to get traction and educate yourself in the process and obviously, you know, move the needle forward?
Yeah, so trial and error. And here's the thing. When you create a niche business, first off, the riches are in the niches. Everybody needs to remember that, because when you spearhead an industry that does not exist, mm-hmm. you will have no research to do. And so there, it's not that I didn't do research. It's that there was none available. And so how I just did it was trial and error. I figured out, okay, what do they need and how do I solve that? And I started with just me. 4 years ago, and you know, now here we are, and I've got, you know, over 30 staff, and we're all through the state of Texas and working on expansion right now. So you've got to just take steps and take chances. And one of the biggest things I learned was, especially as an entrepreneur, when you barely have enough income to cover your bills and then you want to hire people,
yes,
you have to. There's a big conversation you have with yourself about not greed. I don't think of myself as a greedy person, but will I survive, you know? And you have to cross this road where you say, in order for me to get to the next step, I have to take this leap of faith, hire this person to enlarge my capacity, because if I stay at my maxed out capacity with one person, me, then I will never go further. And I can tell you one thing, that was never the goal, was to have me running around doing titles for the next 10 years. That was never the goal. I was always wanting to go bigger, but I had no clue how to do it. And I also would like to encourage people just in the 5-year plan. Everybody feels like you have to have this business plan. And I'm actually thankful that I didn't go to school, because it made me not overthink things. No knock to school, big on formal education, but I can see my friends who have very high level education. There's a lot of thoughts they bring to the table, but there's so many things I didn't have to think I had in order before I started. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest differences. When you start, you have to just go. Even without a 5-year plan, I've learned that you start in very small, intricate thinking moments when you start as an entrepreneur. You can't go big just at the beginning, because you have to take the baby steps. People want to go from 1 to 10, mm-hmm. but there's 2 through 9.
Yeah. How so when you started, you know, developing these relationships with dealerships, how were you able, you know, I do sales for a living, studied marketing. I'm curious what took for you to, you know, convince them, persuade them, and take your process over the edge. Like, hey, this is what actually you need, and here's why. Like, why do they need your service? What do you think was something that stood out about your approach?
Well, these guys move at like ultra speed light. Mm-hmm. So if you can't keep up or converse at that level or act at that level, they're not going to deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very fast paced individual as well. So I think some of the simple things are dressing for mm-hmm. how you want to be taken. Anybody else that was running around doing these things kind of, you know, looked like they may never show up again.
Yeah.
And you know, so my company slogan is we don't drag our heels. And so every day I was in heels and dressed to the nine, even though I was making no money and had no idea what I was doing. But I presented myself in a way that they would take me, you know,
seriously,
and know that I was ready to get business done. And I conversed with them on the level to, because I would help them in their car business mm-hmm. and say, hey, what about this? What about this? So I built trust that way by bringing value.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to understand their needs. And so what eventually made me successful in it was I understood that they needed funding. And so I created a service that was very fast so they could get their funding quicker because of my transfer process.
So talk about that process, the transfer process and your service in essence. I would love for people to understand better what is that you guys do, you know, at scale. And frankly, it made you very successful. So,
well, I started with a whole different market than where I'm at today. Mm-hmm. So you have to start somewhere. So I started with local car dealerships and really focused on them for about a year and a half until I got, and I just worked them. I continued to just give them good service. I wasn't scaling up majorly because I didn't know the direction I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a sense plateauing. To me, 2 months is a plateau. So, you know, you just want to keep going forward. Well, one of the biggest moments I realized is you have to cut the people that even if I remember there was a time where I had to cut these two dealers that were 30% of my revenue when I didn't have much revenue
mm-hmm.
and had staff. And I had to cut them because they were taking up and bringing more negativity than they were adding value. And so, therefore, right when I cut them, actually, and had to make space for good, because you have to remove things in order to make space for the good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that because I didn't align with their integrity or their ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because, you know, anything else. But if you're not aligned with the same values, then I can't work with you.
For sure.
And so I cut them. And shortly after that, the largest contract I've ever, you know, had came into my lap 2 months later. And so I ended up creating a new market for a manufacturer for the EV market. So the electric vehicle market,
mm-hmm.
and we basically transfer the titles for them in the state of Texas, all throughout Texas. What I had done for the dealerships is transferred in Dallas. When I got this large contract, I expanded to all 254 counties in the state of Texas. So what we do is we handle the business between, we pay the tax money to the tax office and we process the paperwork and then return the plates. That's what my company does. So we handle all the finances for these companies and all the paperwork. And it expanded massively once we, you know, got that larger contract. And then I built a proprietary software about 2 years ago, which we're in the process of licensing out as well to other companies.
Very cool. Wow. So, I think that's a fair analogy here. Concierge service for title and tax purposes.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
Yeah, you could absolutely say that. Third party or concierge.
Yeah, that's what I always thought of you guys is just, you know, the kind of the next level because time is money.
Yes.
Especially for these dealerships, like you said, they operate on a speed that they, you know, that the obviously money is king for them and the rate of return. So the fact that you can streamline certain processes for them and make it, you know, quicker, more efficient. I mean, that's huge. So I admire you for that idea because that's brilliant. Ever since we've met, I don't think I've ever met or heard of a company that does it. I mean, maybe there are, do you think that there are competitors that you know of or?
There are, but it's to a different degree.
To a different degree, yeah.
Our level of service, which is when you are a concierge company, yeah. you have to have the best service.
Correct.
And if you do not understand that, you yeah. will fail.
Correct.
And so that is one of the biggest things that we've had to provide is the service, because if they wanted to, they could figure it out.
Yes.
But would it be as, you know, efficient and remove the headache? No. So you have to have that high quality of service. To answer your question, there's nobody who does it like we do it. And we've had to spearhead a brand new market with this manufacturer.
So when you talk about you said the software that you guys developed, how did that come to picture? Was this just, the stage of development in your company? Because it sounds like you're licensing it. You're deploying this to the benefit of those dealerships. How did you come to that point that you need this?
Well, you know how I mentioned I'm a problem solver.
Yes.
I don't like to be overwhelmed with emails or tasks or any of that stuff. So I like to solve and streamline anything I can.
Mm-hmm.
So how this came about is because when we first started with this larger company, everything was done via Dropbox and email. There was no sustainability or scalability that could ever be accomplished with this model. And I knew that they were going to grow. So I had to grow and think ahead before they did, because it takes a while to develop proprietary software, especially for somebody who doesn't even hardly like technology. And I definitely hit a major roadblock with that. One of the worst events of my company career happened while building that, and so I got redirected to another software company, and we basically rebuilt it not the exact same, but much better in a 6-month period. And by the grace of God, they called me. My larger client called me the day I was going to tell them I'm coming to your city next week and I will be releasing this. And they called me and said, Chelsea, you do an incredible job. We know that you give us great service, but the model you have right now is not sustainable for what's to come. And I said, you know what? Guess what? I'm flying out there next week and giving you the best software you've ever seen. And we're going to organize, streamline, and cut your operations like you've never seen. And I went out there and did it.
Wow. So you're basically, I mean, it's such an amazing footprint in this story, how you gradually, from nothing, from scratch, basically, again, 2 months, a box of bagels.
Box of donuts.
box of donuts. Box of donuts. And then solving problems, developing relationships with dealerships, launching software, deploying it, licensing it. And now you said you have 30 people, right?
Yeah, 30 plus.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what do you think you've learned along the way? What are some of your biggest lessons and challenges, perhaps? Some of them you already mentioned, but what has been the key differentiator for your success?
There's a big difference between the challenges I've already talked about, mm-hmm. outward challenges and inward challenges. And if I can say one thing I've learned over this entire process that has carved me into a brand new human being, I would say do not forget yourself in the process. I gave so much and completely forgot that I was a person with needs and needed to take care of myself because I was so driven. Did my drivenness get me to where I am today? Yes. Would I change it? Yes and no, because I learned great lessons. But what I'm saying is, if you do not know yourself, take care of yourself, understand yourself in the process, you will lose yourself in the process and you will not be successful. And there was a point last year where I almost wanted to just say, forget about it all, because the pressure and the stress, it's insane what you encounter when you have so many moving parts and you're understaffed to the nth degree to do what is on the table.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if I can say learn anything or what I've learned, it's to remember to take care of yourself in the process.
Yes.
Because my body got so run down. I've been spending the past year getting myself back in action. And I've really learned how to slow down, be more strategic with things. I was a gunslinger when I started. And that's when I realized when you start, it's gunslinging, shoot from the hip. Now I've matured. Now I have counsel. Now mm-hmm. I have people to bounce things off of. And guess what? Don't bounce things off of people who are unsuccessful in that area, because you will not have the answer you want. Well, you may have the answer you want, but not the right answer. If you're unsuccessful in finances, why am I going to ask you financial advice? So be aware of who you're allowing as your counsel and make it a mission to get the right counsel at the beginning because it will change the entire trajectory of where you're going.
And so many great pieces and kind of valuable pieces of advice here. So, you know, it sounds like, and we've talked about it a little bit before we got on set, but I think me and you have something in common, and that is we have a bunch of things in common, I think, but we have, you know, what we love surrounding ourselves with business owners, with people of success, because there's so much to that. You know, your journey through, growing entrepreneur, scaling, but you've always has driven you to these folks that have accomplished probably something already and you have not yet. And that has always been kind of this fruit that you wanted to grow and perhaps multiply into some capacity.
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting because I have friends and close ones that just look at me and say, Chelsea, can you believe what you've accomplished? And I look at them and kind of just point to the next person and say, but look at that.
Yeah.
and that's not necessarily the place you want to live. And I've learned to slow down and live to be content while having drive. Because let me tell you, that's possible. And if there's anything that I can encourage anybody on, it's finding contentment with the drive. And contentment is within yourself. Stuff will never make you content. Mm-hmm. It will just add more variables. And so don't ever think that just because you can buy or do or travel anywhere that it's going to make you happy or content. It won't. And I've had to figure that out. So going back to these people, I've always been attracted to very successful older individuals. So my friends since I was in my late teens, early 20s have always been 56-year-old CEOs. Because I was in a position then where I just was a sponge. I asked every question imaginable. Well, how do I learn? And I wanted to learn from their mistakes so that I could avoid them on my journey. But I mm-hmm. listened. And that's the difference. Because some people, it blows my mind, they just won't listen. But you have to make yourself teachable. So the really profound moment was when I was actually around these same people in different times in life and have now surpassed or been equal to their level. And that's a pretty mind-blowing experience because your position and demeanor now change mm-hmm. and now you have to go to the next level. So I've been very fortunate to have very influential people in my life and to mentor and things like that. But if I can encourage anybody, it's shaping, literally your path is shaped because of who you're around because they will change your thinking. And so it doesn't matter if your friend who's like, oh, let's just not go do that today or don't worry about that. You want those people who are going to push you but also love on you too and, allow a place to relax. But if there's anything, it's that. And I went through a ton of isolation when I first started the company, which is not healthy. And because I was so driven to get the job done and I'd wake up, work, go to sleep, work. And even if I wasn't doing something, I was mentally exhausting myself. So I just want to encourage people to get the right people, know what you want, have vision on who your friends are around you, and then go find those people. Because without that, it's a very hard track to be able to stay on if you're in complete isolation. And then your thoughts are just regurgitating and it's not actually creating anything new. And so that's what I'd have to say about that. And I feel like I've now got a very solid foundation of friends, of leaders, of, counsel, everything like that around me. But one thing I'd encourage you in too is pay for your counsel. When you get to that level, you need to pay for your counsel because you get what you pay for at the end of the day. Yes, people love you. Yes, people want the best for you. But nobody will go to the extra steps that you need to make them take unless you pay them.
No, there's no doubt about it. And I think advisors, I can see you. It seems like you need to have those from all kinds of directions because you have a lot of energy. I think you're very resilient, very passionate. You walk the talk. But part of it is probably your upbringings. I go to schools and try to help students. And I think everybody is kind of on their different clock and time zone. I don't want to say time zones, but it clicks with folks at different times in their life. You got it very early, and I was similar to that level because I was just independent, moved out of the house very early. But if you go to college, you don't think about like internship, not internships, but mentorships, or like having mentors and having advisors, and you're not navigating naturally to 40, 50, 60 year olds that have accomplished a level of success. I think it comes over time. What do you think that was that key differentiated in you? Was it the life circumstances? Was it the way you were abroad early on? Because it's subconscious, and you were in your, you know, late teens, early 20s, and you were naturally curious and asking all these questions. So how can a person instill that mindset?
That's a great question, Tomas. So for me, I was raised around a lot of adults and a lot of people all the time. And I think that added, you know, value and skill sets that definitely helped me down the road. But I think taking chances and taking risk and making time to think, there is nothing more important than taking time to think. And how that ties back to your question is, how do these people get, you know, the desire to be inquisitive? I think it's thinking and asking yourself the right questions versus just putting a ton of information inside of you. Because a lot of people, I heard this once, a lot of people have the right answers, but they don't have the right questions. And if you begin to sit with yourself and ask yourself certain questions, I believe from the inside out, it will change the trajectory of how you interact with people when you get clarity on who you are and where you want to go. And that's a constant journey.
So reflection, like natural process of reflection, because, you know, what comes to mind today is, I mean, there's so many distractions, technology, you know, friends pulling you left, you know, direction, right direction. And then you come home, you're like, damn, the day is already over. Like, so you have to make these conscious choices. And I remember making those as well. And I'm still making those to this day. Obviously, it's a process that doesn't end. But how can one, you know, get to that place? Because I think we all reflect, but there's different levels of reflection and different levels of depth and how we process our thoughts based on our maturity levels, etc. So you know, if we're talking to a young person, and they, to me at least, and please tell me if this was a similar experience for you, but my parents were always like, I love my parents, 35 years of marriage, taught me everything. But like, they would tell me things. I remember my dad telling me, you know, you got to do this. This will help you. And I'm like, Dad, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you know, you're just a stubborn child. You don't listen. And then you take some stuff and then it sits in your head. And Dad always says the same thing. And then you go outside the house and you hear it from my coaches, my basketball coaches, my advisors, my career counselors in college. And I'm like, this is the same stuff. Like, they literally told me that. So I had this like aha moment, like, oh my God, my parents were right. And like, from that point on, it was just like, boom. Like, I literally went, you know, like, I don't know, like a pouring water, because in terms of, you know, my thought process, and everything just clicked. And my dad would always say, it's all about relationships. It's all about who you know and not, you know. And in Poland specifically, that's a different set of circumstances, but an economy and different country. But that's what it is. You can't progress in life without meaningful relationships, without advisors, without mentors. So what do you, was this experience for you similar, or how did you have, you know, gain this aha moment, like this twist in your mind, like, oh damn, like I got this. This is what I have to do from this point on.
Well, I think that when I got my main counsel that I've got right now, I've accelerated tremendously on my self-awareness.
Yeah.
So I'll come back to self-awareness, because I think it's the root of a lot of what you just said right there.
Yes, yes.
And things happen to click, but I think you can accelerate that process. It's very frustrating once they do click, because then you're blown away that you had never seen it before. And I've been in like an accelerated version of that for the past year and a half, 2 years, ever since I hired, you know, my business coach. And it's just mind-blowing. But you know, the relationships that you have, those are all absolutely key. But going back to how did I come to the place where I knew I needed counsel, was I remember talking to this woman and my head felt like it was right after I got that massive contract, had no clue what I was doing. They asked me if I could do this, this, and this. I said, yeah, had zero clue. And I'm talking a public company. I had no clue what I was doing, but I said yes. And I was like, I'll figure it out. Richard Branson, just say yes and figure it out.
Of course, yeah.
So I did that, but I bit off way more than I could chew alone, going back to the capacity of oneself. So when I met with her, I basically, my head felt like it was going to explode because I had every cylinder spinning. And when I felt like I was there, the pressure was so intense, it forced me to go out and get that counsel, to go pay for that counsel, to get it. But this was trusted counsel where I'd been developing a relationship for a year. I just brought her on at a higher level into my company as a paid, you know, mentor versus not. So she's taught me a lot with self-awareness, but I want to go back to that because your stream of thinking and how things can tie together for you, like you just said, it was just like the stream of water and everything clicked.
Yeah.
And there's multiple moments of like that in life, by the way. You know, and we'll continue to encounter those. But the more you can look at yourself and maybe you do something that maybe you're not so proud of and you realize what made me do that. And you just stop. You're asking about how to actually get that reflection. You stop and ask yourself, why did I do that? What made me actually do that? Whatever it was. And what was the root cause of that? And you just sit and ponder. And I promise you'll get some answers. And that's when you start to begin this self-awareness journey, which then opens other things to click. And then it also opens your mind to hear from those counselors and those types, if that's not a natural thing for you already.
Yes.
But everybody can start with themselves.
No, and I agree completely. I think the journey starts with yourself, but you also think another experience that I've had is just asking for feedback. Very early on, you know, I remember I was in the job market going through a difficult situation, being a foreigner, and I was just, you know, just very aggressive and kind of going after the job market. But I didn't really have any strategy. I didn't even have much the process in place. So then I just started asking for feedback, and I just sat there. And as much as I love to talk, I also began to learn how to listen and actually capture feedback. And I'm like, oh my God, is this really what I'm doing? But again, it took me so much time to get to that place. So I think, you know, to your point, it's a journey that everybody goes on their own, you know, time. And I think the more we can invest in this, not only time but resources, I think if we're capable of, if you can get a coach, even better. But I feel like that the sooner you realize those things, then you will be stunned what type of doors can open up. And I think you and I can speak to that some more. So I want to transition to something real fast. I want to be respectful to your time, obviously, but I know as a business owner, you are involved in a community too. A lot of people know who the title girl is. They've seen your license plate and everything, which again, it's coming back to what I said at the beginning, such a great marketing and branding hack, in a good meaning of that word. But what do you do in a community? I know you're involved in a TAB association. You know, what type of experiences are you involved in outside of your business?
Yeah, so I'm actually on the board with the TAB, which is Texas Association of Business, and I'm also on the board with the U.S. Chamber for Small Business. Mm-hmm. So I've got to go to D.C. multiple times a year and down to Austin. And my passion for that, I had somebody ask me why I'm involved in the Texas Association of Business, and because what that group is, you know, you're developing the business laws for Texas as a huge group. And keeping accountable to the representatives and everybody who's voting, how they're voting to keep Texas pro-business. And somebody asked me once, why are you here? Is it so you can change some laws to incentivize your business? And I said, I have already gone through complete hell to get where I'm at. So no, there's no laws I need to change because we've already, you know, set everything and established it. I'm here because I want to make sure that Texas stays Texas. I want to make sure that this is a place where people continue to come and grow and live. And I'm so passionate about the state of Texas and keeping us the way that, you know, just pro business and everything we're doing here. And just even down to the school systems, transportation, all of that. And so I'm really excited because I get to use my position – to influence on that level. And when you realize that your position can influence on that level, it's a really powerful thing that you can be a part of a great thing. And that's really what touches my heart with that. Same with the U.S. Chamber. That's on a federal level. And so we're able to connect with small business owners across the entire United States of America and really develop different programs for small business owners too.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. And you know, I'm always curious about that stuff. My heart is very philanthropic, love community service, being involved and serving others, but also for business purposes. I think it helps exposure, helps build relationships in other areas. So I think those are two amazing organizations. You know, you've touched on something that I want to kind of touch on as well, is you've always been very driven, had a lot of fuel and a lot of wood in your fire. But along the way, you've realized that it's also important to take care of yourself. And I think, you know, it's important to highlight that, you know, no matter what dreams you have and aspirations as a business owner, I think you have to sit down and be like, hey, how do I feel? What is my health? Do I am working out, all that stuff? What helped you get to that point, you know, where like, hey, I need to, like, there's life outside of my business. I can't just do this. It's 24/7. That's just how you wired. But you actually have to, you know, do all those things beyond your business or on top of it to help you stay sane, right? So, mm-hmm. so how did you come to that place where you felt like, okay, you know, it's going a little crazy, because you've had these, you said, dark moments internally. What helped you, you know, see the light?
When my body completely gave out and I started passing out. I had worked my body into such an intense state of drive and not taking care of myself that I would literally be, you know, walking around and just pass out. And that happened a few times. And that's when I realized, okay, I've really got to evaluate, am I taking care of myself? Because that's the moment that made me realize, okay, I need outlets. You know, I did a personality test and they said, with your personality, you have to work out every day. You have to physically exert energy every day for your personality type. Mm-hmm. That was tremendous for me. I've realized that golf and tennis is a fabulous outlet for me because I've realized that entrepreneurs, your brains are so active, you know, and people that their brains are so active, you have to it's more entertaining to do like golf or tennis versus just going and lifting weights, as much as that, you know, burns some endorphins, mm-hmm. because it keeps your mind going. It keeps you active. So I have really only truly in the past year found healthy outlets, because I was just self-combusting inside. And I think that's why I was passing out and doing all that, because even my subconscious level was so distraught at how much I wasn't taking care of myself and just loving on myself and taking time to slow down and breathe and any of that, just get mental clarity, that my body just turned on me. And so that's it was a pretty intense experience to finally get to the point where I'm at.
I did not know that for fact, actually. And I think it's, again, it speaks volume of how important that is, you know, yeah. to take care of yourself. And I want to ask you a question on that. Well, did you also make any nutritional changes? It sounds like there was a lot of mental kind of modifications, you know, hey, I need to work out, two particular sports that you're very passionate about, that you like to play. But what else can you dive in a little more depth? Like, what particular changes were you able to make?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very fortunate where I got to a place where I was able to, I've got both like Western and Eastern doctors, because mm-hmm. And a Western functional. So basically what those three are, you know, symptom versus, you know, the root cause. And I got a full picture on both scales and started actually going to check on myself and how am I doing and, you know, work on those routes. They gave me, you know, let me change these things in my diet. Let me make sure I'm doing this. And I've always been big into physical fitness, so I know how to eat clean, but I just wasn't eating at all. I was living off of protein shakes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and just going hard. So, and then taking, you know, pre-workouts and all that just to keep the drive alive.
For sure.
And if you don't rest, you will not have success. So my new motto is I'm going to rest my way to wealth. Because it's a very true thing and it removes the anxiety, which anxiety is based in fear. And, you know, you can't really be successful with a ton of fear in you. Everybody's going to have fear, but to a degree, you've got to do whatever you can to remove that anxiety. I think that's the food you eat. I think that's, you know, just the rhythm of your day, mm-hmm. remembering that each day needs to have its own rhythm. How was today? How can I get better? Do I sit down and evaluate this stuff? No. Like, all the time? Absolutely not, because it's just not in my DNA. However, I do make time to do it, usually maybe on like a Sunday, take a couple hours and just think. You have to have time to process, because you store so much in your subconscious and in your emotions and things. And when you're able to just process it out, I was actually talking to my mom on the phone about that this morning, processing emotions. That is very healthy. And I think it's something people don't do. It's something I didn't do as an entrepreneur. I had, you know, things happen in life that weren't always, you know, good or great. And what did I do? I would compartmentalize it, shove it down and keep going. Be like, don't worry about the, like, don't be weak. Don't be any of that, but you just need to keep going. Put your big girl pants on. Let's go. That wasn't the most loving conversation I could have had with myself, but it got me where I went, or where, you know, I am today, but it could have been vastly different. And I could have loved myself better along the way and just felt better along the way, period.
When you say, so you said, I'm a former athlete. Obviously, we used to live on protein shakes and supplements and whatnot. Put all that stuff aside. It's just a bunch of, you know, a lot of, there's some good stuff, some bad stuff, but I just completely put it aside. So it sounds like you made some conscious also nutritional changes. So like, what do you eat on a daily basis? How many times a day? Like, sleep obviously and rest is significant. Just like you said, this is your kind of recipe. But can you shed some light into your nutritional kind of strategy on a weekly basis or daily basis?
Yeah. Well, what's the funny part is as soon as I walk into my office, everybody asks me if I've eaten, because if I don't, I get, you know, like super hangry. And oh, yeah. So I'm one of those people. And so they're always like, hey, Chelsea, do we need to order you food? You know? And so, but I wake up, I take I know we talked about the protein shake factor,
sure.
But I've got a really good one that I do take as a meal replacement in the morning, because I just moved, so I'm not really adapted to cooking in there yet.
For sure.
Nor do I cook in general. So, but shake in the morning. And then as soon as I get in the office, I order pretty much the same thing every day, just so it's one less decision. You know, steamed spinach, salmon, and corn and quinoa. And then I usually go to the gym, protein, or not a protein shake, but I'll just order some food from there. They got different salads, or, you know, whatever they've got there, or have dinner with friends or any of that kind of stuff. So that's in the nutshell kind of how my nutrition is.
And you go to the
now.
Gym every day?
For the most part.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, or play a sport.
Awesome. You know, what an amazing story, kind of, you know, rising entrepreneur from scratch, to you know, really a thriving entrepreneurial story. You have a business that is growing, that is scaling. I think you also went through this internal changes that helped you with personal development and kind of, you know, help you be a better person, a woman that you are. That's amazing. I'm happy for you, proud of you, of your success. You know, we've known each other, I guess, two years mm-hmm. now. And it's, you know, I've been watching, I've been following, and it's, you know, it's been a joy to get to know you. And I look forward, you know, to, thank you again for being here first and foremost. And I look forward to see, you know, where the title girl goes next. So
we got big plans and good things happening. And I've got a few other businesses I've already started within the past year as well. So that's very exciting stuff, but you got to get your head right before you can make other moves. And that is what I would like to just say to everybody, because unless you got your head right, you will not make the right moves. And the more influence you have, the more wrong move will have a lot more impact than if you made a silly mistake back in when you began. So, yeah, so it's awesome. We've got the good things ahead, Tomas. Super excited about it. Thank you so much for having me on here. And I just got to say, this guy doesn't just talk the talk, but he walks the walk. And so he's one of the most fantastic people I've got to encounter in Dallas. And I mean that. I'm really appreciative that we've got to cross paths and build a relationship. You know, so you're awesome, man. I appreciate you. And thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words. And yeah, looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
What's up, guys? Hope you found this episode with Chelsea Cunningham of value. What an inspiring example of leadership and really learning, you know, from scratch, basically, and getting, you know, to the point where she is today. And definitely, as you heard, she's not done. So make sure you give her some love, give her a follow on social media, connect with her on LinkedIn. She can definitely be found under Chelsea Cunningham, the title girl, if you Google her. I'm sure she would love to hear from you. Cheers.